fallen. We forgot who we are, what we are. So we reach to the conclusion that spirituality is not bearing the different labels on the man body we chose in which school we are learning. This opens your ear to hear the sound, the voice, the music of the sphere, Sri Nada. He opens the seal from your eyes, open your inner eye, single eye, when thy eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Now I hope you'll follow what I mean to say. In the outside world we need some teacher. We are respectful to them, whatever we learn at their feet, but all these outer subjects relate to the outer faculties, mind or intellect. And in a subject which starts, the ABC of which starts when you rise above body consciousness, when the world flashes and there the religion starts, remains back, leisure to mind, we do need somebody. Of our own self we cannot rise above body consciousness. Can we? Why can't we, I tell you? Because our souls are identified with the outgoing faculties, mind and intellect and the body, that we cannot differentiate ourselves. We are under grand delusion. Who can withdraw our attention from outside and from the body below, raise you up, you see I am not the body. Know thyself mean? By self-analysis you know you are the driving force of all this factory of the man body. Then you see the old self which is controlling you. So such like, this is definition generally given by all masters. They never say I am God. They say we are the messenger. We have been sent by God to guide you back to your home. That's all. If anybody says, what 10th Guru said, if any of you do call me God, you go to hell. You see, that is only to stop this misconception prevailing in the world. Our master used to say, he said, take me as your father, as your mother, elder, as your teacher. You follow my instruction, when you rise above body consciousness, you see something more, you may tell anything. So this is something which starts when you rise above body consciousness. And Guru Amar Das came to the feet of such a master after 70 long years. He says, I've got great blessing to have a living master. So Guru Ram Das, he says, pray. Anybody would pray. Oh God, make us the slave of the slaves who have become your slaves. We are all, you see, slaves of our outgoing faculties, slaves of the mind ramifications. We are slaves of the outer enjoyments of all those who are attached to us. We are not slaves of God. So he prayed, O God, lead me to the feet of such a master who is your mouthpiece. And keep me with him till the end of my life. Let my soul depart while at his feet. Naturally, any lover would like to die at the feet of his beloved, is it not? We have been lovers of the world. When we are leaving, we call, where my son, where my mother, where that, where that. And the man who is the lover of God, he says, oh God, I'm going to my father. This is all master says. Guru Amar Das says, now I'm going back home. Don't cry. Baba Jam Singh said the same thing. Our master used to sit some months before, well, I'm leaving you. Oh, such like masters, we pray, O God, give us the feet of such a personality with the mouth of God. And he said, how long can I should like to die at his feet? This is the very biggest prayer, you see. I mean, prayer. Of all the prayers that we have. And he says, why have I chosen this thing? He says, even the most learned people like Shankar, who first gave out about the, what you say, oneness of God is all God, into expression or whatever it is. We are no other than God. Then later on his father gave out the Ramanuj that we are still a cover over that power. We are not that. He also, you see, first he was a preacher like that and ultimately became to be a lover of a Rama, God incarnation power. So as I told you yesterday, in the temples, in the mosques, in the churches, there are symbols of light are found out there. Which is better? They are symbols only to show that such like models, that such like light and sound of God is reverberating within you. And one asks, who is the better? And he is better at it too. Of all these, in whom that light is effulgent, is radiating. That is best of all. So these outer things were found just for teaching the people that such like sound is there, such like light is within you, you are the two temples of God. We have respect for outer temples and places of worship as it is meant to direct people to the true temple of God which you are carrying. So long as the practical people were there, they gave a demonstration of that. They saw their own body was the true temple of God with the grace of the Guru. So he is best of all. Now he says Shankar, the most learned man, came out after to worship of man, incarnation. And Narad, who is the Bhakti Yoga, head of the Bhakti Yoga, like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, he took to the Bhakti Yoga. And last of all, he first worshipped God in the symbol of Mother. Mother enveloped me all around, right, left, up, down. There was no place where Mother was not. He came to his Guru. He said, look here, I cannot rise into quantity, unity of God. He took something, whatever was lying, and put him here. Put your attention here. Rise above. Then he had risen into oneness of God. So I tell you, the most learned and the most devoted God, I mean Bhakti Yoga, and also of all other yogas, they bear testimony, they hanker to come to the feet of somebody who is God made flesh. One is, fire is burning somewhere, to sit by that. And one is learning how to burn the fire by rubbing. So that is why Maulana Rum gave out, if you can find to sit at the feet of a master, not the so-called masters, excuse me, for 1 hour, that will give you an effect, a benefit as you would not be able to derive by sitting 100 years in the outer palace. So Guru Ram Das say, why we want to set the feet of a master like that and die at his feet? Because even the most learned people, the most bhakti yoga heads and others all crave for the presence or the guidance or the company of those who were made flesh, direct mouthpieces of God. He says, further it is, such like people those who are born made flesh, wherever they laid their feet on, where they resided, they became the places of pilgrimages. Christ lived in Jerusalem. That is the place of pilgrimage for all Christians. Prophet Muhammad was at Mecca. That is the place of pilgrimage of all the Muslims all over the world. Buddha was awakened. In India there is a place there. That place is the place of pilgrimage for all Buddhists. Guru Nanak born somewhere which are called now as Nankana Sahib. He sat at the feet of some tree which became sweet, part of it, the fruit became sweet, that called as by that place where he sat. So one word made flesh sat in so many places, all places became the places of worship. Which is better of all? Kabir puts question, O God, have a doubt in me, tell me, clear that out. Is it the world mesh better or the places of pilgrimage? You will have to say, the world made flesh, wherever it says, he is better of all these places of worship. Pilgrimages, because it is due to him that place of pilgrimage came to be. So that is why Guru Ram Dass say, I pray, O God, let me sit at the feet of you, of such a word made flesh, and die at his feet. Then he says, what to do? Just seek. If you hear somebody like that, go and sit at his feet. Don't think of your high position, or your wealth, or your ego. You just hear somebody like that, go and sit at his feet. See for yourself what you want. Don't go by the propaganda. Simply go and see. These are the things which sometimes stand in our way. You know, there is one saint, Ravidas. Mirabai, a saint, came to his feet and was blessed, was put on the way. The king of the time was called by name Pipa. He heard about it, that Ravidas, who was by profession a cobbler, is a great saint here. So many people had gathered together at his feet and derived benefit. He also wanted to go to his feet, but he considered, I am a king. How can I go to the feet of a cobbler? Worldly position, sometimes the wealth, sometimes high education stands our way. Oh, I know so much, I have so much, why should I go? One day he could not remain, you see. At the evening time, here you see, at the evening where many people go around, in old days people used to go to the places of worship, sit there, temple, or at home. He ran up and go to the house, went to the house where Ravidas saint was living. He said, Master, I have come. He said, all right, he has not thought of his position and wealth and anything. He has come, all right, I will give him such a thing he will remember forever. You see, he was just washing the skin. He was a cobbler. And the king was afraid, oh my lord, what will happen if I'm asked to just drink that water which is washing off the skin? You see, the phenomena of presence of a great master, man forgets everything. He could not refuse. He simply took the water, let it go to the shirt, and ran back, oh God, I'm saved. I was otherwise fired. When he came home, he called for the washerman, and he can wash this cloth. That was some strain of the skin, water of the skin, washing. So the daughter, he asked his daughter to just with your tongue, breathe it out, wash it, and then the shirt was washed. In that there was attention, you see, mind that. Attention works wonders. What is initiation? It is literal attention given to, which gives you a boost to rise above body consciousness. Outward expression of the soul is called attention. When attention is diverted, rabbited at one place, that works wonders. So, Vaishnavan Dattan became to be known as a saint. People began to gather together at our feet. King also came to know about it, that the daughter of my Vaishnavan is saying people are coming, and let me go to and visit him. He is not a cobbler, she is not a cobbler, you see. He went over there. When he reached there, the daughter of the Vaishnavan stood up with hands folded. And the Pipa king said, told him, look here, daughter, I have come to see you as a saint, not as a daughter. You should not have stood. She said, also I have not stood that because you are a king. I am only standing in reverence because whatever I have got, it is through your favor. And she explained what it was, that I just washed the stain of the on the shirt which you gave us with my tongue. Then he repented and came in. Now the master, the people say, if you hear of such a master, who would not wish to go to such a master? But such masters have been few in the past. Even now they are few, but they are not, world is not without them. There is food for the hungry and water for the thirsty. Demand and supply goes on as a law. If a child was born 5,000 years back, 500 years back, or now, does not nature make arrangements for world and the mother before he is born? Don't you think those who will come in future, they will refuse that consideration? So, masters do live. They never say we are gods. They simply say we are your brothers. We are all brothers and sisters of God. Of course, they say they, in the grace of God, something is working. Then all credit goes to him. So, Guru Ram Das gives, wherever you hear such like masters, you go to his feet. Don't think of the worldly position. Don't think of your high position. Don't think of the learning that you have got. To go is better, you see. Saint Augustine said, what is the way back to God? He said, first humility, second humility, and third humility. You are humble only with you. Try to go to somebody. Even if you go there, you are not humble, then whatever tumbler, you see, whatever glass you put under it, tumbler of water, only that will be filled. If it's that place above the tumbler, then what you know that's all right. Keep it to you. Just hear what he says. He might be saying something else. And you understand that, follow it. When you have that in manifest in you, become humble. Truly humble. Any fruit later tree, the branch of it laden with fruit that bends down to the ground. So humility comes up only then. Now the point is, what does he give such a man? We are business like, you see. Why should you go to such a person? He says, his first work is give a boost to you to rise up above body consciousness. He gives you a rebirth into the beyond. You know what Christ gave out? Except you be born anew, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. And Nicodemus, who was a very learned Jew, had there. He came up, Lord, how can, we are old ones, how can we re-enter the womb of the mother and be reborn? He said, you are a learned man, everybody respects you. Don't you know that flesh is born of the flesh and spirit of the spirit? Then he said, you must be reborn. this rebirth called. In the monkey head is called twice born. You see, this is what they give. That's only had at the feet of mother. Guru Nanak was asked, when did you escape the wheel of life and death, coming and going? He said, by having a rebirth at the feet of my master. When you become conscious co-worker of divine plan, your ego is gone. If you have not become conscious co-worker of the divine plan, then you are the doer. Whatever you sow, you will have to reap that. Good action will give you good results, bad, bad. The wheel of coming and going will go on. So this is the first thing who raises you from the depths of the poisons of the outgoing faculty above all that, bring you up and open your inner eye to see the light of God. Mora Rung refers to it as, we are all in the prison house of the body. We have forgotten ourselves. How to come out of the body? You say, just break the roof, open the hole into the roof and go up. So in man body, you see, so long as you are working at the level of the outer faculties, all impressions are coming within you. If you stop all that, draw your attention from all outside, the outgoing faculty won't work. And just collect all your attention at the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes, then that inner eye will open, single eye, you will see the light of God. You see the voice of God, music of the spheres, which will lead you where? That will lead you where? From where that emanated. Okay, God said, I am one and wish to be many. There was vibration. And vibration results in two things, light and sound. So this is direct way back to God. So, what is done? You see, when you meet a master, he gives you how to rise above body consciousness, how to become conscious co-worker, divine plan, that power is working, it is not you. Then you lose your ego, that Lord of reckoning, of justice, which just gives us, what's it, decisions according to our actions, done while a doer. But those who become conscious co-worker of divine plan, they have not to attend that court of law. So this is, while all your records back are present, when there is nobody to bear the reactions of the past, no ego is left, no doer is left, then who will bear that? So all are watchers. So you are not to attend the court of reckoning after your death. As you sow, so shall you reap. You escape that wheel. Because you become conscious, you are no more doer of the day thing. So, such like people, you say, what to do? Because you want permanent peace and personal jaya, then there is one thing only. Don't, he said, delay a minute. Seek the feet of somebody who is master in that sense. And so when such masters come, what they do? They say, all right, here's the way back to God, come up, God will lead you there. He has sent me to carry you out there. He does not say, I'm God, he says, I'm messenger. Just, you see, there are two kinds of masters who come into the world. Electricity is the same. Somewhere it burns fire, somewhere it gives you ice cream. There are two different workings of that power, which is called. One is called incarnations of God, the other come of the negative power, you might say, of God, time, and the other is incarnations of God. So saints also come to the world, their mission is different. And others also come, their mission is to punish the wicked, to uphold the righteous, and let the world going. Whereas those who come to take back souls back home, that is to depopulate the world, you see, and bring people home. It is something, I may give you an example. There is a prison house. One man goes there, he takes pity on them, they don't get good food, he allows some money. And the prisoner begins to have good food after that. Another man goes there, he sees they've got no clothes. He sanctions some amount and the prisoner begins to have good clothes. A third man goes over there, he says they've got no ventilated buildings to live in. He sanctions some allotment, makes some money, and they begin to have good ventilated house. All three people went over there, their sympathy was for the prisoners. They began to have good food, good clothing, and good buildings to live in. Another man went up. He had the key of the door of the prison. He opened the door. All right, go out, each one. Who had more sympathy for those men? So saints are like that. They come to take you back home. So whenever you come under the custody of such a personality, called by any name you like now, he's a man born like us, of course. But the difference is, he has control of all his outgoing faculties, he takes work from them as he desires, and we are led away by the outgoing faculty. He rises, he wants his body is working in the world, but his soul is in tune with God, is the mouthpiece of God. He appears to very much, I'm engaged in worldly affairs, but whenever he wants, he rises above body consciousness and transcendence beyond. So he can work both ways, here and there. To have such a master, living master, is a great blessing. So such like people come up, then the question comes, what is in their hands with which they do all these things? They are world made flesh, mind that. That word has got, as you told, as I submitted to you, to a special light and sound. They come, that's already within us, but our soul is just identified with the world outside. If we draw all our attention from outside and gives it something to start with, some capital to start with. It not simply says, go on doing it, you'll have it. No. A bird in hand, is better than two in the bush. He gives you demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness. Give you some capital to start with of light and sound by regular practice. They do own, you see, at times Guru Amar Das says, I was sometime like you working the world under the control of outgoing faculties, but now I have risen above with the grace of God, working through my Guru. So every saint has its past and every sinner future. So there is hope for everybody. Those who got man body, they have got the heredity right, as I told you, to know God. So in their hand, what nectar they have got, what medicine they have got, by which they raise our souls from all outward enjoyment, gives a higher bliss within, that is to bring you in contact with the world within you. Thy world is a lamp unto my feet. Take heed that the light which in you is not darkness. You are unable. With that thing, they do like that. So, when the master come, you know that when Christ sent his disciples to preach outside, he said, what you heard in the ear, tell them from the housetops. These things are now being given out openly at platform. This is the basic teachings of all masters who came whether in the East or the West. Now we need somebody. If we can rise up our own selves, well and good, what more is wanted? But if we cannot, if somebody comes there, then God sends him. Your prayer is true. God makes some arrangement to bring us in contact with somewhere where he can be, have this facility of rising to demonstration of rising of our body consciousness, opening inner eye. So they come and proclaim, here's the way. God wants each one of you to come back to his home. And that thing which leads you to your true home is within you already, controlling you in the body. You are simply to withdraw your attention from outside and give you a contact with that, and which will lead to where, from where it emanates, to Absolute Lord. So all outer religions, the labels of which we are carrying, they have these very basic teachings in the scriptures. For want of practical people, we have forgotten. This is what I am putting before you. It is no new thing. It is already given in the books, in the scriptures. I have written one book, Nam or Word, from all scriptures.
The seven
social body now exists in the world. They simply touch the true living and higher consciousness. It's what social body, the labels of which you are carrying, remain there, first step. Have true living and somebody there, if you can have your own self contact, that power which is within you, when will you know about it? When your attention returns from all outside and from the body below, then your inner eye or single eye will open, you see it in them. If you can do of your own self well and good, do it. If not, we cannot do it generally, because we are already identified with the outgoing faculties, intellect, body, the world. They have forgotten ourselves and all practices. What we use for meeting God relates to the outgoing faculties, mind or intellect. How can you rise above? So someone is needed to raise you up, give you a demonstration of it, give you something, some capital to start with of the light and sound within you, and then dwell further. There the ABC starts. That's not the end all, the be all. We have got many mentions in the house of our Father. Macrocosm in the microcosm. This is what we gathered from the masters, you see. And this is what is meant by the word master or guru in the terminology of the saints, not in the sense as we use generally. We have respect for all those at whose feet you have learnt all these subjects which relate to the outgoing faculties or intellect. But we do need somebody who has access into the vijam, who can give us a demonstration of that how to rise above body consciousness, and we bear testimony what the master says, really that is so. The company of such masters is called the true satsang.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. This morning our reader is Barbara Ann Grimes. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I am.
Okay, carry on.
Continuing on in the book, A Great Saint, Baba Jaimal Singh, His Life and Teachings. We finished the life of Jaimal Singh, and now we are in part three, which Master calls Baba Ji and the Science Spiritual. To present the teachings of a past saint who has left no compositions of his own in verse or in prose, and whose time shorthand and the tape recorder were yet unknown, is not an easy task. However, the bunch of letters that Babaji addressed to his beloved Babu Sawan Singh Ji have been preserved and are very revealing. Further, some of those who came in contact with him have left suggestive accounts of his discourses. But most important of all, Hazar Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj, to whom he passed on the spiritual torch, has interpreted within living memory the message in its essence of his great guru. Piecing all these together, we can arrive at a clear conception of the nature and the scope of his teachings. And there is a note here. Most of the citations from Babaji's letters in the pages that follow are translated directly from the Gurmukhi originals. The reader wishing to read his entire correspondence with Baba Sawan Singh Ji may consult Spiritual Gems, Bayas, 1958. The Creation. The Absolute Reality, in its ultimate form, was Nirakar, Nirgun, and Anami, that is, the formless, without attributes and nameless, and could only be expressed in negatives, neither light nor darkness, neither sound nor silence, etc. It was incomprehensible, ineffable, infinite, and indescribable. It was this supreme reality that was responsible for everything else. When it projected itself into form, it brought into being the purely spiritual realms of Agam, Alak, Satnam, etc., light and sound appearing as its primal attributes. Thence, as it descended downward, it brought into creation the material current, or Kal, which gained in predominance as it moved lower and still lower. The countless regions that were created below the purely spiritual realms of Satdesh could be divided into three grand divisions, Brahman, Unt, and Pind, the causal, the astral, and the physical, or the spiritual material, the material spiritual, and the material. So long as one lived in the plane of the relative, one was caught in the web of Maya. One desire was succeeded by another, and pleasure was followed by pain. There could be no lasting rest and no lasting joy. God, in filling the cup of man's earthly blessings, had left out happiness and contentment to ensure that his creature did not wholly forget his Maker. The only way to attain beatitude lay in transcending the realm of relativity and reaching the regions of pure spirit where the soul merged in the absolute and became lost in the ocean of consciousness and was freed from all failings and desires. The path of liberation. How was this transcension to be achieved? Babaji, like Kabir, Nanak, and Swamiji, repeatedly affirmed that outer practices were not of much avail. Reading of scriptures could awaken one's interest in spirituality, but by itself, it could not ensure emancipation. Mystic literature and religious ritual were useful in many ways. They kept mankind aware of a deeper reality than the one they were accustomed to in everyday life. But this reality was to be approached through practical means and absorption in intellectual problems and controversies only diverted one's energies from one's real path. Kabir said, O man, if you have not realized the Almighty. Why do you brag of your greatness? Let go thine intellectual subtleties. And again, don't be deluded by restricting yourself to mere reading and writing of scriptures. The path of the masters is different. He who is truly after it will get it. The devil could quote scriptures, and Babaji maintained that religious wranglings and disputes, pride of caste, varnashram of worship, pilgrimages, mere reciting of scriptures, worshiping those who were past and gone, and such other actions and disciplines were all a great deception, a trap set by Kal to keep the soul within the bondage of the realms of relativity. In like manner, the outer kriyas, or practices of traditional yoga, pranayama, and various mudras and asanas, were ineffective for taking us to our real goal. Babaji, as his life amply testifies, greatly respected holy men of all creeds and callings, but he never lost sight of man's highest ideal and lived by the insight expressed by Kabir, which says, "All holy ones are worthy of reverence, but I adore only one who has mastered the word." He had at a very early age experimented with many a yogic method, and whenever he pronounced on the subject, he spoke not as one who bases himself on academic learning, but as one who has himself practically experienced what he says. His words carried conviction, for there was not a trace of prejudice in what he said. He simply explained that he himself had explored all avenues and found the path of Sant Mat or Surat Shabd Yoga to be the highest. He had a great deal to say about the wondrous, miraculous powers that could be acquired through yogic sadhanas, but his one criterion was, did they make one the master of one's mind, freeing one from the tyranny of desire? If so, then there was nothing to be said against them. But if not, as was usually the case, then they were hardly of any use. While in Muri in 1894, he, in response to many questions addressed to him by Baba Sawan Singh Ji, dwelt at length on the subject of comparative yoga and concluded by demonstrating how Kabir and Nanak had assimilated the best from their predecessors and how they had penetrated far higher into the mystic path and how they had succeeded in developing a method for mergence with the formless absolute that was within the reach of all. He would often quote from past masters to reinforce his point, and in particular, he would cite what his great guru had said, "The path of the masters is far superior to all others. Believe ye in full faith, and the saints live eternally in the splendor of the Supreme One. All other creeds and orders fail to transcend the realms of relativity." That's from the Sarbat Chan. What was this science of the Surat Shabd Yoga that represented the crown of mystic achievement? It was, said Babaji, the path most economic in effort and the one most rewarding for reaching back to the primal science of all life and light. Its secret lay in the insight that if the soul was to merge back to the point from where it had descended, the way of ascent must be identical with that of descent. The Nameless One, when he had assumed name and form, had projected himself into Shabd, Nam, Kalma, or the Word. It was this spiritual current whose primary attributes were melody and effulgence, that was responsible for all creation. In a letter dated 21st of April, 1903, Babaji wrote, "It is through Shabd that everything came into manifestation. Ishwar, God is the sustainer of the world. Jiva, individual soul. Maya, the subtle and gross material. Brahman, the physical, astral, and causal planes, all were brought into being by its motion." All sages in their different ways had testified to the working of the word or nam power. Through utterance of the word, all things came into being. And again from St. John, "In the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God." What the masters of the Surat Shabd Yoga said on this subject was nothing new. What was distinctive was their emphasis on the idea that if everything, even the Jiva Atman, which is the individual soul, had come into manifestation through the agency of Shabd, then Shabd was the best and only means for reaching back to our point of departure, the Nirakar, Nirgun, Anami, and Absolute. The music and glory of the word spread through all creation and permeated our being. If only the Atman could be contacted with it, it could use this string from the nameless Lord to reach his door. But the soul, in its downward descent, had loosened the link and had forgotten its real nature. Acquiring the gross coverings of body and mind, it had lost sight of its native home and identified with its prison. Babaji said in his letter of 15th of May, 1900, "Ever since the Jiva Atman, which is the embodied individual soul, has been separated from Sach Khand, true abode, and from Shabdun, it has lost its faith in the Sat Purush, the true one, and Shabd Dun. But the Shabd always looks after the Jiva Atman, though it knows it not, for it has fallen deeply in love with mind and Maya, with the objects of Maya and the senses that are so deceptive. It loves them so well that it cannot realize that it is to its own detriment, considering as beneficial what is in fact harmful. Love for the mind has left it anesthetized, and the mind itself has fallen senseless before the pleasures of the senses. And finally, Maya has cast such a spell that it may never recover from its swoon." The Perfect Master. Our spiritual faculties had got so fogged and cloaked with the gross coverings of mind and Maya that even though the Shabd was forever reverberating within and around us, we could not hear its music or see its glory. From Raj Wadhans we have, "Those eyes are different with which my beloved is seen." How is this chain to be broken? How could man once again revive his link with his Maker? For this, Babaji affirmed, one needed indispensably the aid of a competent master. From Varbhyagra, "Such is the will of the Lord. He cannot be known except through a living Satguru. Without his enlivening touch, the soul could not awaken from its slumber and get attuned to Nam. The Jiva Atman was too far lost in the gross material to contact Shabd on its own account. Besides, the inner way was not an easy one, and even if the soul could transcend physical consciousness and enter the realms within, it could not proceed very far on its own." The regions Unten Brahman were well nigh infinite, and without a spiritual guide it would remain lost in their wonders. Further, there were points in the mystic journey, especially between one plane and another, that were so difficult that but for an adept, the soul would be forever obstructed there. And here we are given this note. Baba Sawan Singh Ji, in a letter to one of his disciples, makes the necessity of a living master in the mystic path very clear indeed. He tells us, "When I was in the hospital on account of the fracture of my leg, one day when I was meditating, Babaji's form appeared before me. Babaji, or rather what seemed to be his form, said, 'If in a case of emergency, meat and drink are used, there is no harm.' But when I repeated the five names, he got up and walked away. Now, because I had seen Babaji in real life and could visualize him, I found out this trick. But those people who concentrate on the old masters who passed away thousands of years ago are likely to be misled. His, the saint's, eyes and his forehead cannot be imitated. Hence, you always require a living teacher for the pupil, a living physician for the sick, a living husband for the wife, and a living ruler for the people. I maintain that no one else can help a disciple so much as a living master." That's from Spiritual Gems. The spiritual journey was not a matter of intellectual disquisition. It was a question of practical ascension. Babaji indefatigably emphasized the necessity of the living master for success in the field. Past saints may have explored all the mysteries of the mystic realms and may even have left accounts of their experiences, but the inner worlds were indescribable in terms of human language, and at best, they could only speak in hints and parables. Since these hints and parables were about a realm of experience completely beyond ordinary human experience, they could not be fully understood except through the aid of one who had himself direct access to the experiences they described. Thus, even to understand the true message of past masters, one needed a living one, and it was only when Babaji met Swamiji that he understood the full import of the Granth Sahib and the writings of Kabir and the great saints. The spiritual journey was not a matter of intellectual disquisition, it was a matter of practical ascension. Even for academic knowledge, a book could not be a substitute for the guidance of a perceptive teacher. Then how much more would this be the case in the spiritual field? The Jiva Atman was so lost in Maya that, according to Babaji, it could not of its own accord contact the pure Shabdun. An act of grace alone could put it in touch with the inner light and music, and this grace was the gift of a living master. Radhaswami, Lord of the soul, full of pity and compassion, came down himself in the form of a saint and gave us the clues to the spiritual regions and showed us the way to reach Sach Khand, the true abode, through Shabd Dun. Past saints were worthy of reverence. Their lives were luminous signposts, always beckoning us toward our divine home. But it was the law of nature that the living impulse could only come from the living, and the task they had performed for their own age must, in ours, be performed by one who lived amongst us and who had mastered the way that they had mastered. In fact, their writings, if critically studied, were an endless testimony of the need for a living master. Who was a competent living master, and how was he to be recognized? Babaji knew that there were countless wolves that moved about in sheep's clothing, and since everything depended on finding the true guide, he laid great stress on the need for vigilance and discrimination. His early experiences had shown only too well the rarity of such great spirits, one perhaps in an age, at times more, as with Nanak and Kabir, Maulana Rumi and Shemas Tabrez, Tulsi Sahib and Swamiji, who were contemporaries, but alas, always too few. And a man was blessed indeed if he could come across such a one. The records of past saints could be used as a touchstone, as had been done by Babaji during his quest. If a man was a true master and further a mystic of the highest order, all obscurities and contradictions that puzzled one while reading the scriptures would vanish at his touch. He would not only be able to explain effectively the writings of one school of mystics, but of all, for he had access to all the inner realms, not just one. As a lad, Babaji had met many a sadhu, but not until he met or sat at Swamiji's feet did he begin to appreciate all the treasures stored in the Granth Sahib. Mystics of a lower order could interpret records of only those experiences to which they had access, but one who had ascended to the highest heights could explain everything. A point which Babaji's meeting with the four pundits had brought out fully. Another feature of a true saint was his amazing humility. It was one of the supreme paradoxes of human life that those who claimed to be saints were not, and those who were never claimed to be such. Nanak declared himself to be no more than a slave of the servants of saints, and Swamiji maintained unruffled the garb of his humility. It was not by what a man claimed that he was to be known, but what he did. A tree was judged not by its name, but by its fruit, and a saint was recognized by his perfection as a man, his freedom from worldly desires, his love and kindness, his unassuming ways, his concern for the welfare of others, and his unconcern with name and fame. He gave away his spiritual gifts freely, like any other of nature's blessings, and maintained himself by his own labors. From the Saranj, bow not before one who calls himself a guru, but depends on the charity of others. If on the human level it was his perfection as a man that marked out a true saint from the rest, on the spiritual he was to be known by the inner experiences and guidance he could afford. His ability to give some direct spiritual experience, however little it may be, to his disciples at the time of initiation, was, Babaji insisted, the final test of a true master. He did not promise spiritual attainment in some future life after death. He gave a taste of it here and now. He linked the soul to the inner light and sound, and it was the disciples' task to nurture and nourish the seed to full blossom and maturity. The gift of Nam was the sole prerogative of the Satguru, and his guiding hand stretched everywhere, in the inner planes no less than the world outside. So great were his love and protection that no earthly relationship could ever hope to compare to them. His radiant form accompanied the soul after it had transcended the body and led it from plane to plane toward its celestial home, and the perceptive disciple could see his grace working at every turn. Miracles he could perform indeed, being one with the divine will, but he was reluctant to disturb the settled plan. And even if he let his grace take the upper hand, he let it work unseen, claiming nothing for himself, but working only in the name of his own master. He did not concern himself with disputes and controversies. Go within and see for yourself, was his constant dictum, and the stress always fell on the inner and not on the outer forms and rituals. And that concludes our reading for today. Thank you, Master.
Barbara, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, I'll do a count. So today there were 70 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing satsang for us. And please hang up your phone.